And welcome into Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a loaded show for you here today. Dana O'Neill from The Athletic drops by at 7:30. We'll discuss the latest in college basketball, a big one tonight between Tennessee and Vanderbilt. So we'll look ahead to that game coming up. Our weekly visit with Matt Duchesne, Predator Centerman, at 8:45. And then Adam Vingan from The Athletic drops by at 9:30. So a lot to come here on the show today. And at 8 o'clock, we're going to play our armchair GM game. We're going to do our best John Robinson impersonation on how in the world he's going to go about handling this offseason for the Tennessee Titans. So Joe and I will both do that starting at 8 o'clock. Joe Rexrode, how are we doing?
Good. You know, crunching those numbers on the armchair GM. I like being an armchair GM.
Yeah.
It's better than being a real – well, I mean, it'd be pretty sweet to be a real GM. Let's be honest. But, man, he's got a tough job.
They got some work to do this offseason. That's what I've learned in this this exercise going through the numbers yesterday. I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult than people realize.
Are we allowed to have, like, a 33-man roster? Because as long as we can, we don't have to pay any backups, I feel pretty good about my team.
Me too. Ryan Porth, how are we doing?
Doing just fine. Thank you.
What did you think of those Ottawa Senators last night?
I'm not a big fan of the Ottawa Senators in the last 10 days.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that.
Just throwing it out
also
there.
Not a big fan of every game that's happening in Canada.
It's tough to predict.
It's been very tough to predict, and that has not been fun. But otherwise than that, otherwise I'm good.
Just figured I'd check on you, see how things were going.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you're just hitting hard on just Ottawa losing,
and then they just keep winning. Yeah. And I, at some point, I should learn and just go the other way.
And potentially the worst goaltender interference call I think I've ever seen last night in that game. That they Ottawa ends up winning because of. So good for them, I guess.
I had Montreal 60.
I'm happy for them.
I had Montreal 60-minute line.
Oh man!
And they score with 2 seconds left and gets taken away with that goaltender interference.
It's pretty bad. Pretty bad call. Also, a goaltender interference call last night in the Predators game. A Predators 2-0 win against Detroit, the 59th career shutout for Pecorine. Joe, another impressive performance from the Predators, particularly defensively. This is the second game in a row where they just haven't given up a whole lot out there. Pecorine's played well when he's had to make some saves, but two in a row for the Nashville Predators, and I thought defensively he looked pretty good last night.
Yeah, and late, you know, third period, there was actually some action for Peck. I don't know what the Red Wings were doing the first two periods.
They were not playing offense.
The game got interesting, got a little more fun, and Pecorine, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see him. And I think our friend Jeremy Kickover, I believe he tweeted that he's now 19th or tied for 19th in all-time shutouts in the NHL. I'll find
that
it because
right.
I retweeted it. Pretty cool. And who knows? This may be it. I mean, he even said it last night after the game. He brings it up, you know, like this could be it. And yeah. If that's the case, it's cool to see him have some success even in a season like this, you know. But, yeah, he's tied for 19th. There you go. Marc-Andre Fleury is the only active goalie with more shutouts, 64.
Yeah, another great performance from Pekka last night. And to your point, like, you look at his season numbers now, 2.36 goals against average, 916 save percentage. The last stretch here, he's played really well for the Predators. I mean, he doesn't, you know, at all times look like old Pecorine, but he's had some moments this year where he looks like vintage Pecorine. And I thought there were a couple of those last night as well.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the – there's always surprises in a season. I did not see this coming, you know, the idea that it would flip-flop. And, yeah. You know, this early, I mean, I guess it's, again, it's not as early as you think it is in a season like this, but still, he's the clear guy. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he can keep it up and if he can keep getting this kind of support, you know. It's easier to get this kind of support against the Red Wings, but still, it's cool. You're looking for cool stories in a season like this, and he's probably top of the list.
Philip Forsberg gets on the board last night. One time that counted, another time that did not count. What do we think of that goaltender interference call? Granlund making contact with Bernier.
I just don't know anymore.
Yeah.
Whenever you have to have an email to explain the whole thing, probably not a great sign. Yeah, I thought I did at first glance. I was like, I didn't think so.
Well, the Ottawa example that we brought up earlier, and this one, apparently there needs to be a 3-second window where the goaltender can get back in position.
Yeah, like the puck needs to go to the other side of the ice. Apparently.
Right, like 3 seconds. Like you can reset in a second or two. Like
you can reset in 0.8 of a second.
Well, and look, there was incidental contact with Granlin and Bernier, but the real problem on the play was the Detroit defenseman barreling into his goaltender. Like Granlin didn't push him in there; he just fell into his goalie.
I had a tweet all ready to go for when the challenge would not have been won by Detroit, saying, "Were they challenging, you know, goal interference by their own player on Bernier?"
And then they won. So that tweet did not come out.
That would have been a good tweet.
I did not hit tweet. I did not hit send.
Well, Philip Forsberg
just deleted it.
That was a beautiful play by Forsberg on that play. And then he finishes it later, throws a pass to the middle. It deflects off Mark Stahl and into the net. I thought Granlund scored on that, and I was about to throw something across the room.
Number five.
And Preds picked the click.
Number five for
me. But now the listeners have caught up to you. It's four for you, four for the listeners, one for Ryan Porth, zero for Robbie Stanley.
I'm fine with the listeners being up with me on the top of the mountain.
I'm sure you are.
We can look down on both of you together.
Thank you.
Didn't you have Duchesne last night?
Yeah.
And once again was robbed by Bernier.
Yeah, right on the doorstep.
He was right there.
Yeah, and to your point, and I swear this is true, I'm not saying this just because you said it in our group text yesterday, Porth, considered Ellie Tolvanen for a hot minute. Because we talked about the other day how well he's been playing. I think he has been playing well. And that was a gorgeous shot by Tolvanen last
night. Great pass, but talk about that's a guy you want on your power play.
Yeah.
That's what people are talking about with Ellie Tolvanen.
He had another one late in the third period where it was just a rocket of a wrister where there wasn't much space at all. And I thought he had scored for a split second.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a great shot. I mean, the goal he scored last night, I think is, you know, illustrative of what we've seen from him since he got here in terms of the shot and the ability that he's got. But what I've been impressed with, like he made a great play in the offensive zone last night. Detroit had the puck, and he just came. He was in third period. He just came and ripped it, and just totally he took the puck away and had a chance after that. I mean, his all around game. It's still not exactly where it needs to be, but there have been some pretty impressive strides I think he's taken in that area.
That's why you let the young guys play.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. And you know, when you're not when you feel like you're going to play and you don't have to worry about like every little mistake might cost you. I think that a lot of times that helps someone grow as a player.
I think it does too. I mean, it frees you up a little bit. Johansson back in there last night. So we talked about probably a good chance he would be back in against the Red Wings on this road trip, and back in there last night on the third line with Ellie Tolvanen.
Third line center Ryan Johansson.
Yeah. First line center Kyle Granlund.
That's right. Sorry, you've been Wally Pipped. I'm Kyle Granlund.
Your boy.
That's right.
Joe's Granlund.
Should have scored. Joe's Granlund. Should have scored. But makes a difference to have Johansson in there.
So now you've won two games in a row. Another game coming up on Thursday against the Red Wings. You have to feel good, especially about the way you're playing right now defensively. Like, and I don't know if this is just coincidence or not, and I tend to think that it is. But since Ben Harper's come into the lineup, Favreau looks a little bit better out there. The Tenorti-Favreau experiment was not going well. And the Ben Harper-Favreau experiment, through two games, very small sample size, has gone much better.
The Jared Tenorti experiment as a whole has not gone well.
Yeah, no. When that's one of the names, it hasn't panned out so well. Yeah, Ben Harper, though.
Hey,
great name. Spelled differently, but still.
He kind of looks like Ekholm out there.
Yeah.
With just how big and rangy he is. Yeah.
He didn't have 67 shots on goal in the first period last night like he did in the game Saturday, but, you know, can't do it every game.
Fired up there, baby.
Hey, impressive win for the Predators last night. Pekka, 59th shutout, like I said. And I don't know. Like, I'm interested to talk to Duchesne later because another example last night of just a great chance that just gets robbed. Like he's got like four of those this year where he's been in tight and has played so well and has a chance, and just either the goalie makes a great save or he sends it just wide. Like, I was looking at his face last night after that save by Bernier, and it's a little bit different because, you know, the Predators were winning the game at the time, but
right,
the frustration has still just got to be there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Because, I mean, some of them are not, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, a guy flubs it because he's, you know, he's pressing or whatever. I think he's just been flat out robbed, at least on a few of these, which I know happens every player through the course of a season. Maybe he's getting them all out of the way early.
Maybe so.
The Preds are not, you know, the Preds are up to sixth place. Now, of course, Dallas has five games in hand.
Yes.
But technically, they are ahead of Dallas in the standings.
They are.
Dallas is 5-4-4.
That hot start, it's fallen off a little bit for the Stars. Not having Sagan in there and Bishop in there, they've had some issues lately.
They started 4-0.
Yeah.
And now 1-4-4 since then.
Yeah, it's not good.
But the Duchesne play last night looked eerily reminiscent to the last game against Detroit with Bernier in net.
It's like same play.
Yeah.
The save in the first game was more impressive because
right.
Duchesne lifted it. But yeah, it was like same play.
Who knew that Jonathan Bernier would be his
former teammate?
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan Bernier for years as the backup for the Kings was a nemesis for the Preds.
He was.
He had their number. When Jonathan Quick was, you know, so dominant, Bernier was his backup, and Bernier just kept beating the Preds. It was a running joke.
He did. Now the Predators got their revenge on him later. Game 5 and 6, Western Conference Final.
Correct.
Anaheim Ducks. But yeah, there was a stretch there. And Pete Weber was talking about it last night on the broadcast. I think there was like a week where Jonathan Bernier shut the Predators out, and Steve Bernier had a hat trick against the Predators. Same family, same week. Predators not a big fan of the Bernier family.
Yeah, I didn't know that was such a Preds killers.
I forgot about Steve Bernier.
Steve Bernier, baby.
Haven't heard that name in a long time.
Forsberg, a goal and an assist last night. 17 points in 18 games. Looking pretty good. I mean, he's a guy that we talked about taking it to a different level, and we're going to play some comments in the next segment, but I don't know that I've seen Forsberg play this consistently well in the regular season. Like, we know he's been good, and he's had some stretches where he's been dominant, but I've seen a pretty consistent game from him so far, which I think if you're a Predators fan, that's very encouraging.
Yeah, well, it's certainly needed. I mean, it's badly needed by this team especially. But I agree, and I know production isn't everything. You know, it doesn't tell the entire story. But usually with him, there are dips. And, I mean, you get to this point, and you're still basically at point a game. That's a great sign that speaks well of him. Because, he's also on a team that it's not as easy to score with this team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been on other teams the last few years where – probably some easier opportunities that pop up for you than on this team, which is scraping together goals.
Two goals in two games with first-line center Mikael Granlund. Just throwing it out there.
I'm just saying.
Wally Pipp. when we come back, we will continue the discussion on the Nashville Predators and Philip Forsberg specifically. What does his future look like with the Nashville Predators? What could his next contract look like? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's Forsberg, right circle, the shot, tipped into the net, Granlund off to the side, and now do the Predators get a one-goal lead. Here's Forsberg, across, he goes, the shot, and the score! Ellie Tolvanen scores on the power play, and the Predators take a 2-0 lead. And that will do it. Predators take this one 2-0 over the Red Wings tonight. They win their second straight, now 8-10 on the year.
You know, it's nice to see us now be able to, you know, string some games together where we've played more to the identity we wanted to play with. And, you know, I think it's something, again, we can build on tomorrow in practice and get ready for the next one.
A 2-0 win last night for the Nashville Predators against the Detroit Red Wings. The 59th career shutout for Pekka. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, another goal last night from Philip Forsberg, an assist as well in the game. Now with 9 goals, 8 assists on the season, 17 points in 18 games. And I said it, I mean, right now, the way he's playing and how consistent he's been, not only a force for the Predators this year, but productive for the Predators so far this year, I think a very positive sign if you're a Predators fan moving forward. And Pekka Rinne, after the game, had some comments on Philip Forsberg and the way that he's been playing so far for this season for Nashville, and some very high praise from the Nashville Predators goaltender regarding Philip Forsberg. Here's what Pekka Rinne had to say.
Pekka, you've been Philip Forsberg's teammate now for several years. I'm just wondering if you've ever seen him on the level that he seems to have found so far this season.
I think it's just it's been obviously great to follow his progress, and you know, obviously everybody knows his talent, but you know, as a player and as a guy, as a leader, I think he's been taking strides every single season. And no, I haven't, to answer your question, I haven't seen him this good. I mean, he's a leader out there off the ice and on the ice, and scores huge goals for us and makes huge plays. He's a force out there. He does it all, plays physical and creates a lot. So a very important player for us.
So that was Pekka Rinne after the game last night talking about Philip Forsberg. Joe, you've seen Philip Forsberg play a lot of hockey as well. Is this the best that you've ever seen him play?
I'm not sure. I know what Vingan's writing this week. I'm not sure on Forsberg. I think back to like the last playoff series they won. I mean, how do you define it? Like in that series against Colorado, is this like the Harlem Globetrotters? Like, what are we doing out here? You know, he did some things that you're just like, what is going on? But to your point last segment, I think, and this would be a good study to do, you're talking about 18 games now. It feels like he's had streaks of 10, 12, 15. You know, again, this is where I don't have the numbers. That would be really interesting. It seems like he's been more streaky, and he has not had a big fall off here. He's carried this team. So from that perspective, I think you could make the case. And again, if you're basically a point-of-game player, I guess you could look at it both ways. Some could say, well, who else is going to produce? But if you have a team that's struggling like this offensively and you're producing a point a game, I think it's more impressive.
Yeah, me too.
Because, I mean, you just naturally, to me, it should be more difficult for you to find opportunities.
Well, the pieces that are theoretically in place to help him score more haven't really done that this year. Like, I mean, we talked about the Jofa line, Johansson and Arvidsson. I mean, Johansson's been hurt for half the year. Arvidsson has not been as productive. Like, it's not like he's been on a line with those guys and they've been tearing it up. Matt Duchene, I mean, he's been, you know, getting some chances this year, but he's not been, you know, lighting up the score sheet either. So it's not like the other high-paid guys that have been productive before are just offensively out there lighting it up. And Forsberg is right now. To your point, I think that's almost more impressive in a way that, despite the shortcomings of the rest of the team offensively, he's been able to be as consistent as he has.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, and, you know, it's also, like, obviously you are playing for yourself. You're trying to just be the best player you can be. But this can't have been an easy year either. And I think Pekka Rinne pointed to something there on leadership that, it seems like he's really grown more into that too, which this team certainly needs.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about Philip Forsberg to begin the week because of the report that came out over the weekend. You know, the Predators and the three untouchables that Elliot Friedman threw out there: Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, Pekka Rinne, and a lot of Predators fans reacting on Saturday night that Philip Forsberg was not on that list. And I said it on Monday, and I'll kind of double down on it right now. Predators are not trading Philip Forsberg. Like, it's just not going to happen. He's got a year and a half left on his deal. He is eligible to sign an extension this summer. If I'm the Predators, that may be priority number one this summer, is to get him locked up to an extension. And the question is, okay, if that happens, what does that contract look like? Like, what could his next deal look like? He's making $6 million per season right now. And, you know, you look at the numbers. Typically, when he's right, he's proven to be a 30-goal scorer and a guy somewhere around the 60-point mark. Now, if you kind of prorate his stats this year, based on the sample size so far, and that could change. There could be injury. There could be, you know, just a drop-off in play. But so far, I mean, you're talking about a guy in the 70s in points and a guy that's playing really, really well on that side of the puck. So That could change, and that price could start to go up. But I think the next contract could be somewhere in the $7.5-8 million per year range. And, you know, I think Philip Forsberg absolutely could command that on the open market.
Do you not think he could command more than that?
Maybe. I mean, part of it is the position that you play, and he's not a center. So that's a factor in this discussion as well. You know, he is a 30-goal scorer, but he's had some injury-plagued seasons where he's, you know, still in the 20s. It's not a bad place to be. So I think $8 million is probably around the number. He could get a little bit more, especially if he continues to play this way. But I do think not being a center helps you or hurts you in that discussion too.
Like, I'm looking at salaries, you know, wingers out there like Taylor Hall is at 8. Gosh, Blake Wheeler's at 8.25, you know. Voracek, same thing. Sebastian Aho, 8.5. You know, Jeff Skinner's at 9.
Oh.
I mean, there's some, you know.
Yeah, that one's not great.
You know, you got Rantanen. You got Rantanen at 9.25. Jamie Benn at 9.5. Mark Stone at 9.5. Kucherov. You know, I mean, you're talking about, now you're getting into
elite
guys. You know, it's kind of amazing. Like, Ovechkin's only at 9.5.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, I mean, that seems about right.
I mean, he's never had the big season, like the what we talk about all the time, the 40 goal season, the 70 point season. Like Blake Wheeler, I mean, Blake Wheeler had two seasons in a row where he had 91 points. I mean, he's a guy that's had, you know, those big seasons. So look, I think people look at Philip Forsberg and his talent and think, yeah, I mean, that guy's a $9 million per year player. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just think based on the production that we've seen and based on the position he plays, I think $8 million could be the sweet spot.
So I ran some comparisons on catfriendly.com, and the one that has the most positive match is one that Phil Kessel signed years ago with the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of age, production at this point in their career, and that was $8 million a year. So you factor in inflation, I would probably go closer to 8.5 with how much this one is going to cost.
Could be. And if you're the Predators, like, it's interesting because you've got, you know, if it continues to go this way this season and you're not where you want to be in the playoff race, you've got some decisions to make with your long-term contract. And Adam Vingan was on the other day with Darren Donica Chase and talked about, like, if you're going through a retooling or a rebuild or whatever word you want to use, you want to have as much salary cap flexibility as you can. Now, you also don't want to lose a player like Philip Forsberg as well. So it's an interesting spot for the Predators to be in. But I think if I'm the Predators, like, Philip Forsberg to me, he's 26 years old. By the time his contract expires, he'll be 27 going into his year 28 of playing. He's still a guy to me that for the next, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years can play at a pretty high level. Like, I absolutely, even if you think that you're going into a retool or rebuild, he's a guy that I want a part of this. Like, he's a guy, if I'm the Predators, that I want to be in the fold here. Now, the question would be, depending on how the rest of this season goes, how does Philip Forsberg view this? And does he want to sign an extension? I think that'll be interesting to watch this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, so a guy like Pekka, who this may be it for him, you know, if I'm him, I'm looking at this like, I don't know if I want to go through a couple of years or whatever it is. Again, we know it can be more. Let's remember who the Preds are playing this week. Yep. How many years have they been in this situation? But if you're Forsberg, and if you believe it could only, it may only be, you know, a couple of years, it doesn't have to be the absolute, you know, take it down to the studs and build it back up, then you can still have really good years with good teams. I mean, I would think Forsberg would want to stick around just because this is all he's known.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess you never know. There's also the appeal of being on the open market, and what would the price, you know, where would his price go from there? But, you know, I think the Preds realistically aren't trading him and are going to try to extend him this summer. That no matter what else happens around him, that seems like one of the pretty close to sure things. I guess there was a report that the Leafs are trying to get him, right? Leafs are trying to get everybody.
Yeah, the Leafs apparently have no salary cap.
Yeah. So, like, the Chiefs. The Leafs and the Chiefs. No cap.
just going after Ekholm and Forsberg, everybody. They're just bringing everybody into Toronto. So, yeah, I agree. I think that'll be the way the Predators approach this. I mean, you never say never with a trade, but, I mean, unless they just totally get their socks knocked off, I don't see any way they consider that. And I would absolutely begin those conversations this offseason. So we'll see what the future looks like for Philip Forsberg, and we'll see where that number lands, because I think $8.5 million could be exactly where that number lands for Philip Forsberg. And based on the way he's played this year, probably deserves it. When we come back, we'll dive into the Tennessee Titans. And speaking of the untouchables with the Nashville Predators, if we had to form a list for the Titans on untouchables, who'd be on that list? How deep would that list run? We'll talk about it next. Also introduce our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. How'd you like to watch the Preds game in style? Tune in later on in the show as we will reveal a keyword for you to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate. It's your chance to watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food for your homegate. You must be 21 or older to enter, and we'll have that opportunity for you coming up a little bit later here in the show.
And the food is going to be from 312 Pizza.
Ooh.
So add that into the mix.
That's a pretty good night right there.
Dos Equis, 312 Pizza, Nothing But Cakes. I mean, if anyone's ever had those, you know, those
I've
can
had
be
too many at one
pretty
sitting.
Addicting.
Yeah, there. Yeah, I can speak to you. It's been very addicting.
I have not had that. The 312. So you guys like Chicago-style guys? You guys like?
Look, you put any pizza in front of me.
Yeah.
I'll eat it.
Okay, Chicago or New York style?
Chicago.
Slight edge to New York. Slight.
Me too.
But again, it's pizza.
There's some people who try to claim that Chicago style isn't like pizza. It's pizza casserole.
What do we think about that?
Does it taste good? Well, it tastes good.
That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, hey, I love it. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, like, there's a big debate, you know. I think it is pizza. If it has crust, sauce, cheese, and toppings, and it's pizza.
Those are the key ingredients, yes.
Yeah. But there's the New York style, like the New York style mafia, okay?
Yeah.
Like that's the only pizza in the world.
Apparently so.
Yeah, so.
Any pizza's
good disagree.
Pizza. I disagree as well.
Anyway.
Sounds like a good prize pack. We'll have that opportunity coming for you later in the show here today. Joe, let's introduce our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. If you were forced to part ways with one of these Titans cornerbacks, not quarterbacks, cornerbacks this offseason, who would you pick? Malcolm Butler or Adoree Jackson? I am very fascinated to see how this one goes. We're very early in the voting process. 86 votes are in, 57% going with Adoree Jackson, 43% going with Malcolm Butler. I'm interested to see how close this is as the show continues here. And remember, starting at 8 o'clock, both Joe and I are mapping out the Titans offseason, playing a little armchair GM, doing our best John Robinson impersonation. Very early, Adoree Jackson, 57% of the vote, Joe.
Yeah, so usually the early results, I mean, they change. But I would guess that Adoree would win this, that more people would want him cut. Don't necessarily agree with those people. I think it should end up close because I think it's very, very difficult. We could have given them the all of the above option, I guess. That's possible.
We had a couple people yesterday on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, say, need to cut Butler and Adoree.
Cut all the corners. As long as you rush the passer, who needs to cover anyone?
Yeah.
You're fine.
Just go the complete opposite of last year.
Right. Just blitz every down and cover people with Byard. Byard by himself in the back end.
Yeah, Vaccaro gone too. Just Byard. Yeah. Byard and Christian Fulton back there. Yeah, we'll see how that works out. Draft 7 rookies as well to pass rush.
Yeah, draft 7 pass rushers. That's part of my plan too.
Looking forward to that plan coming up at 8 o'clock. We talked earlier this week about the untouchable list for the Nashville Predators, and that got us thinking. If you had to put together an untouchable list for the Tennessee Titans, players that are just off limits in terms of being traded or being cut, whatever way you want to take it, obviously a little bit different in the NFL, what would that list consist of? So, Joe, as you look at the Titans roster right now, If you had to identify some untouchable players for the Titans, who would that be? Who would those players be, I should say?
It's not a long list.
No.
I mean, look, so when you – here's the thing. Let's set the ground rules here, because what trade are we talking about? Because if the Titans are talking to the idiots in Houston
– Deshaun Watson?
I mean, who's untouchable? Who's untouchable?
Nobody.
Right. You know, now, in general, I would consider Henry, Tannehill, A.J. Brown untouchable.
That's it?
Yep.
My list was going to be basically A.J. Brown. That was pretty much it. I mean, look, I mean, would I trade Ryan Tannehill or Derrick Henry? Probably not. I mean, it would take a heck of a deal, but, you know, we talked about this. You know, last week, if Deshaun Watson's available, am I trading Ryan Tannehill? Probably.
Well, yeah, well, sure. So that's the thing. So,
but if he's not, like, if it's just...
If it's a non-Watson trade, that's my list.
Yeah.
If it's a Watson trade, there's no list.
Right. I would agree with that. I mean, A.J. Brown, I'm not moving on from A.J. Brown. Maybe for Deshaun Watson, but other than that, I'm not moving on from A.J. Brown. He is probably the number one on the list based on, number one, how long it's taken the Titans to find a wide receiver like him, and number two, I think how good he's going to be as he continues to progress here. A.J. Brown is an absolute stud. You know, I wouldn't trade Derrick Henry. He's a running back. I realize that they're viewed very differently than, you know, the opinions vary as you go around the league. But I was trying to think yesterday as I was coming up with this list if there's a player on the defensive side of the ball. I do think some people would say Kevin Byard, but I don't think there is. Like, I don't think as it currently stands, there's one player on the defensive side of the ball that I would consider to be untouchable.
Now, the first name that comes to mind to me is Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the thing with Simmons and Brown, of course, is especially now when you don't have to pay them a lot of money, you know, they become more touchable when they're making 15, 20.
Right.
You know, like A.J. Brown, all of a sudden it's like, well, maybe we could trade him. Although I agree. I mean, I think that's a guy that you want to be your number one receiver for a long time, long term. But right now, especially at $1.5 million, yes, A.J. Brown working out pretty well for you. But, yeah, Simmons is the only guy that I would agree. And I think Byard not long ago is in that category. But I just think once guys get to that second deal, it's really – I mean, how many teams – I'd love to go around all the teams. And what's the list? What's the list for guys who are on those big contracts now? Because it's just like you have to figure out a way to – cut and cut and cut and do different things and constantly renew yourself. So that makes all those guys to me, for the most part, most of them tradable.
What about Taylor Lewan? Obviously, we saw how important he was this past season for the Titans, and he's been a very, very good player. Would you consider, like, what would it take for you to consider trading him? Not saying the Titans are going to trade him, obviously, but, like, just for the sake of this discussion, what would you have to get back in return?
Well, it'd have to be something massive. You know, let's say, let's forget the Watson thing because that's just a different deal altogether. But let's say, you know, what if the Bears said, okay, Khalil Mack for Taylor Lewan straight up, you know, something like that, like a dominant pass rusher in his prime. It's your biggest need. You're going to now weaken yourself at one of the most important positions in the NFL. Because pass rush is important, but so is blocking pass rushers. But I'd still consider it.
Yeah.
I'd think about it.
I would, too. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there are several players the Titans have, and it's kind of like the Predators, that it would take a lot. But the absolute untouchable guys, I think, are Tannehill, Henry, and A.J. Brown. Like, Porth, if you had an untouchable list, does it go past those three, in your opinion?
It does not go past number 22.
That's it.
That's it. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. I was about to say. Derrick Henry. He's the only one.
I mean, defensively, I would probably throw in Big Jeff.
Okay.
Right now, with the fact that you still feel like there's a ceiling that he can hit, and if he hits that ceiling, you've got a dominant, consistent defensive lineman that can you know, really make a difference. Right now, I would put Simmons on that list.
If we were doing this like in September, I think he would have been on my list. And I think he's going to be good. I think he's good. And I think he's going to be good. Is he going to be that dominant guy? You know, I don't know.
I think he's going to need certain.
But he was banged up this year.
I don't know if he can be the guy on the line, but if he has some pieces around him and not just be the focal point of the pass rush or, you know, the interior, if he has a J.J. Watt next to him or a really good pass rusher on the other side of Landry, I do think that creates opportunities for Simmons.
Sure.
Looked pretty good early in the season with Jadeveon Clowney.
Joe's Clowney.
Maybe not a coincidence.
He would have looked better with Kladavian Jowney.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned his name. I've got to add him to my offseason plan. And like a fake mustache, pay him $8 million to come back. See, that's the thing with Simmons, though. See, the untouchable players are the ones that you don't need to worry about putting the help around them.
Right.
Like, you know, like the guy in Los Angeles, for example. But how many of those players are there in the league? You know, there's one of him right now.
Yeah.
I mean, Simmons is close, certainly. I mean, we haven't even talked about Brett Kern.
Well, I can't believe I left him off the list. I've called him the best player in the NFL.
He might be. He needs more opportunities to run the ball, but other than that, I feel like there's no weaknesses in his game.
Do the double reverse.
Double reverse. Right. See if he could juke out Devin White. See how that goes for him. Oh, Brett Kern, definitely on the untouchable list for me. Best punter in the league by far.
He's love that guy. What's Brett Kern? Brett Kern has drawn, what, about $3.5 million cap hit?
Yeah, man.
3.25.
Yeah.
You got to make some cuts.
Going with Trevor Daniel out there.
Gonna
see if he can shank a couple.
He's going to have Dane Cruikshank punt and cover punts and start at safety.
I mean, if you're going to have a delivery driver, at least get someone from UPS.
Wow. A little shade there.
Have you been waiting to use that joke for months?
It's always in the back pocket when Trevor Daniel's name comes up.
Oh, man.
I mean, someone delivered a package from FedEx yesterday. Maybe Trevor Daniel was driving that truck.
Hey, maybe so. That's more power to him.
It's the off season. It's how it used to be in the NFL. You know, you'd have your off season job.
Yeah.
For everybody.
Absolutely. Speaking of off season jobs, a big one coming up for John Robinson to try to figure out exactly how to maneuver the cap and to put a team on the field next year that can be competitive. Just how different could this team look? And what does that mean for the Titans moving forward? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Tennessee Titans. As always, we'll take your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And Joe, I've mentioned it. We're going to have a little armchair GM exercise coming up beginning at 8 o'clock where we go through the moves that Titans general manager John Robinson could potentially make this offseason and trying to make it all work from a salary cap perspective. And not to give everything away, but it's going to take some doing from John Robinson. A lot of work ahead from the Titans and their front office staff to make this team cap compliant and get this team to a place where they can be competitive on both sides of the ball. So, you know, this is hurting, you know, every NFL team with the salary cap going down and not being, you know, in the $205 million range that we thought it could be heading into next season. Going to be somewhere around $182-183 million. That's a big deal for every NFL team, but the Titans no different in that regard. Going to be some tough decisions coming up for John Robinson. And the question is, like, how much different is this team going to look? Because you're 11-5 last year. You win the division for the first time since 2008. You're out in the first round of the playoffs against Baltimore. And we know about the struggles defensively. We talked about it a lot. So this team does need to look different. I mean, you can't come back with the same group and just hope that things go better next season. But you also, if you're John Robinson, don't want to make it look totally different, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And that could be pretty challenging moving forward. It's an interesting balance that John Robinson is faced with this offseason, trying to handle that.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's looking at this day after day like this is the toughest. I mean, no one is expecting ever to go backward. And again, if you're a GM, you don't just go offseason to offseason. You have a plan with a lot of different guys. And so before the pandemic and everything, there was a plan already for like what this offseason would have looked like with about a cap of $205 million.
Yeah.
So now make it $182. So a lot of your plan, a lot of your previous plans now have to be adjusted. So going through the math here, it's hard, honestly doing it like line item by line item as we've been doing here for the 8 o'clock segment. Yeah, it's harder than I realized.
It's pretty hard.
It's pretty brutal.
It's pretty brutal, and there could be some really tough decisions for John Robinson coming up. And you know, we've talked about what that could look like from a free agency standpoint, but also just some decisions that, of guys you have internally. There may be some players that you really like and that you really like what they bring to the table, but just based on the money and the cap hit that they have next season, you might have to make some decisions and move on. It's decisions that you don't want to have to make. I don't think the Titans are alone in that regard, but going through you know these options right now and some of the big money guys on this team, Titans could have a lot of turnover next season.
Yeah, I think there's gonna. I don't know that there's gonna be a name this year that surprises us like Jarrell Casey did last year. Because
right.
When you look at all this stuff, you have to just about utter every single name. But there's gonna be a name that maybe would surprise some people, probably somewhere in there. We've mentioned. I mean, some of the more on the very fringe of reality things that we've talked about, like Roger Saffold. I don't see how you could possibly think about moving on from him. It's a huge part of what you do. It's a huge part of, as you've said, the importance of keeping this offense together. It's also $12.3
million. Yeah.
I mean, it's – yeah, and that's where, like, something like that, and we've talked about the corners, obviously, who there's no way in my mind that Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson are both on this team in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, the more you dig into it, I think the more difficult that's going to be. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Kinston to the show, who wants to weigh in on the Titans. Kinston, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
What's going on, guys? Always a pleasure to talk to you. Question for you. Yes, sir. If you could guys get me straight on this. Now, last year, Titans were working with about $20-25 million in cap space, so we knew we had a limited number of money to go out and get the guys that we needed. You know, Jack Conklin didn't fit in that. And John Robinson made the comments about, you know, Corey and John being similar to Jack Conklin last year. Well, in a year this year where we have a million and some dollars in cap space, we know we're going to have to create the cap space. So there's no limit on how much cap space you can create. So it really comes down to how much do you want to bite the bullet in the future years by moving the money around, which the cap is going to go up for the new TV deal. So my question to you guys is, if the Titans want to keep all their guys, wouldn't that really be up to John Robinson? Because he goes and say, hey, when we cut this guy and restructure these guys, we can create $30 million in cap space. But if we do these guys too, we can create $50 million in cap space. So isn't it really up to John Robinson on who he wants to, how much money of cap space he wants to create to keep the guys that he wants to keep?
Hey, thanks for the call, Kinston. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so Kinston, so talking about creative contracts, which I'm sure we're going to see a whole bunch of backloaded
restructuring
deals.
Maybe as well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he can create some, but I don't think it's not like he has an unlimited ability to do that.
Right.
I mean, and plus when you talk about up to him, if someone offers Corey Davis $16 million, he can't be like, all right, I'll give you $18 million, but the cap it'll be $2 this year. You know, I mean, there's limitations to that. I hear what you're saying, Kinston. I mean, yeah. Like, we're going to go through this exercise basically straight up, and there will be creative things that they do to create more room. I absolutely agree, but it's not. I don't think it's a massive number. I mean, you've got some of these deals. You can restructure some of these, and that's probably going to be part of it. You can ask some guys to take pay cuts. That could be part of it too. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of guys in this league who are good players who are cap casualties,
yep.
Or if you want to stay with this team, we can put you out on the street, and you know what the situation is with the cap and what everybody's strapped out there. Or we can restructure your deal. You can take a pay cut. I think there's going to be a lot of conversations like that around the league and probably with the Titans too. But so for what we're trying to do, it's going to be straight up. Here's their cap hit. Here's the number. I think overall, Kinston, you're right. There's going to be more flexibility than we discussed today, because they're going to have to try to do things like that. And some players, I think, are going to have to, would be smart to go for it.
Yeah, I think so too. And also, like, the other part of this too is free agency. Like, if you're going after some big name guys in free agency, like, let's throw the Matthew Judons out there, or I don't think he'll be available, but if he is, you know, Shaq Barrett, a guy like that that's out there that you know is going to command some big money, $15, $16, $17 million per season. Well, based on the numbers that we have, like, if you sign one of those guys, you're not going to be able to do a whole lot else in free agency. Like, you're not going to be able to bring back Corey Davis for sure. Not going to be able to bring back Jonnu Smith most likely. Like, there's not a whole lot of options for you. So what you could do, I mean, you could make the cap hit lower in the first year of the contract and hope that the cap comes back starting next season. But a lot of times, in order to do that, you've got to guarantee more money on some of these deals for free agents. And, you know, general managers don't want to do that, because what happens if it doesn't work out and then you're on the hook for more guaranteed money going in the future? I mean, it's a really tough spot for general managers to be in this offseason.
Yeah, there's going to be, and that's a good point, there's going to be some deals that maybe aren't ideal in the eyes of the club or the GM overall, but that you have to bite the bullet on to make things fit right now. And, yeah, the cap's going to go up. That's another thing, is how much? How much is it in the short term? I mean, eventually it's going to get back, and it's going to be beyond $200 million and yeah, soaring up from there. But is that I haven't even seen the projections for, like, the next year. I know it's hard to know right now. We think probably in the fall you're going to have a pretty normal-looking football season. Sure hope so. But what does that do immediately to it? Up some, sure, but up dramatically, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see that. And to your point, I mean, when you're planning a couple of years out for a salary cap that's $205 million, or roughly around $205 million, and you end up maybe $23 million short of that, that throws a wrench in the plans very quickly. So we'll have that exercise coming up at 8 o'clock, trying to determine how John Robinson and the Titans are going to handle this offseason. Both Joe Rexroad and myself will play a little armchair GM, so you're not going to want to miss that. When we come back, the news of the day from yesterday, a really scary incident yesterday involving Tiger Woods. We'll react to that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.